tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Good morning. Great to see you guys. Hope you had an amazing Thanksgiving, but hope the turkey hangover is long gone and you guys are awake and alive. So excited for you guys to be here today. My name is Rob, and if I haven't had a chance to meet you, I'd love to meet you after the service. I'll be hanging out in the lobby. I want to invite all of you to dig a little bit deeper with what you're about to experience by checking out a free app called YouVersion. And on this app, it has a place for you to take some notes. It includes all the scriptures we're going to cover. There's a free poll and some other fun things in there as well. And I would just challenge you to take a little notes and dig a little bit deeper with what you're about to experience. Today, we are continuing our series entitled What the Flip, and we are digging into a letter called Philippians that was written by a guy by the name of Paul. And what's interesting about this letter is it is a letter that is filled with encouragement, it's filled with joy, it's filled with happiness, it's filled with excitement. And Paul is so excited and so encouraging and filled with joy that you would think he was writing this letter from like a beach in Cancun. But he's not. He is writing, if you remember from the last couple weeks, where is Paul writing his letter from? Just shout it out. Prison, from a Roman prison. He is chained to a Roman guard, and yet he is able to write about some encouraging things and encourage them to have the joy that he has despite some incredibly difficult circumstances. So we're going to dive into our text today, because I don't know about you, but I want whatever Paul is smoking. I want whatever he is digesting, whatever he is on. I want some more of that, because I don't know how you handle difficulties of life, but when life gets difficult to me, I say, woe is me. I just want to snuggle up in a ball and cry, and like I want to have a pity party, and I don't go through difficulties very well. And so I want to experience what Paul experiences, because he's sitting in a Roman prison, and yet he is full of joy. And so let's just dig in, and we're going to do this by honoring our text. And for those of you that are new, I want to tell you why we're going to do this. We're going to honor the text. In just a second, you're going to stay on your feet. We're going to read it out loud. And the reason we want to do this is because I am convinced that if you honor something, you will get more out of it. If you go into it thinking, oh, I'm kind of bored, or just entertain me, or I'm not really excited to be here, you will get very little out of what you're about to experience. But if you go in with some anticipation and with some honor, God can use it to speak to you. And so we're going to honor our text today. So I'm just going to invite you to stand up on your feet. Be loud and in charge and excited like you're on your fourth cup of coffee. Philippians 2:3-5 says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others. In your relationship with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus. Now that we've read our text, let's ask God to speak to our hearts. And if you don't know what to say, if you don't know how to pray, I would encourage you to pray a simple prayer that I pray often. God, speak to my heart and give me the courage to do whatever you tell me to do. Would you guys spend a few seconds praying? And God, we come before you right now, and we just ask that you would remove the distractions from this room, that you'd remove the distractions from our life. We bring in, God, our problems, we bring in our issues, we bring in our thoughts, and so often our mind is just conflicted. And so would you help us to have a mind like you? Would you help us to hear from you? Would you help us just to get over ourselves and just for a few seconds just sit at your feet and listen to whatever you want to say to us? And God, would you give us the courage to obey you even when it's difficult? Would you give us the courage to follow you, God, even when it's hard? And just thank you for what you're going to do. And just ask that the words of my mouth and meditation of my heart will be acceptable in your sight. Oh, Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. I don't know if you guys remember life before the cell phone, but it's hard to remember what life was like before we all had cell phones. Like, I know there was a time in my life, in fact, a lot of my life, probably even the majority of my life, was spent without a cell phone, but now the cell phone is so attached to who I am that I actually feel naked if I don't have my cell phone. Like, there's something off. There, There are very few things in my life that I will go back and get if I leave them at home, but my cell phone is one of those things. I will turn the car around, I will leave, I will go back to get my cell phone. And I was reminded how important the cell phone is this week. This week I went to Walmart and I was picking up some things, and I saw they had some balloons, and so I asked them if they inflate balloons, and they said that they did. But the person that was helping me was a little nervous, didn't quite know how to blow up balloons, even though it was her job, and I was in her section. She didn't quite know how to blow up the balloons, so we did a lap around the store to find another employee that could blow up the balloons with her. And she finds someone, and then the two of them go into the back and disappear for 30 minutes to inflate 6 balloons. Now, at this moment, I didn't know how long they were going to be gone. I just knew I couldn't leave my section because they were going to come back any minute, and I had to wait there. So I thought, no worries, I will just pull out my cell phone. But it was at that moment that I realized I'd left my cell phone in the car. It was awful. And to make matters worse, the music that started playing right when I realized I didn't have a cell phone was none other than Nickelback. If you're moaning, you feel my pain. Like, this was, in the moment I tweeted out, I said, I have discovered purgatory. Like, this was no cell phone, stuck at Walmart with some employees that don't know how to inflate balloons, even though it's their job, and Nickelback is blaring, look at this photograph. Awful. It was awful. Thank you. So, the cell phone, though, is a big part of our life. Like, before I had a cell phone, I didn't take a lot of pictures. But now that I have a cell phone, I'm constantly taking pictures. I want to photograph the things that are part of my life. If I have a good meal, I want to photograph the meal and share it with everyone to see. If I have a good concert experience, it's not enough just to be there. I want to take a photo and share it with the rest of the world. If I'm at a sporting event, I take pictures of it. When my kids do something even halfway cute, I take pictures of it. Like, I'm constantly taking pictures. And this is a change for me because I used to not take pictures of anything, but now I take pictures of everything. And so I want to do just a social experiment, if you will. And I want to take a picture of some of us, okay? I'm going to flip this around to selfie mode. And I'm just going to sit right here. People are getting nervous. They're like adjusting clothing and let's see. Oh, my thumb's in the way. Hold on. Let me switch hands. Let's see if we can do it like this. Okay. Let's see. My finger's still in the way. Why is my hand in the way? Maybe. No. We're going to do this. We are. Why? There. We're going to do this. Okay. Let's see. I want a lot of us in there. Okay, that's a photo. And I don't want you guys to feel unincluded, so I'm going to take some more photos. Let's just see how this group doesn't even want to smile. They're all looking away. And I don't want you guys to feel excluded. Let me take a photo of this section. People are literally fixing their hair. Okay, we got this section. And there's not a lot in the back, but for those of you in the back, let me get the, that's why you sit back there, is that what you said? To avoid all the people, is that, okay, we're going to take. Now, I am going to attempt to, if my phone will work with me, I'm going to attempt to send these pictures and get these pictures up on the screen. That's what we're going to try to do. We're going to do a little social experiment together just to see. Let's see. No pressure. You guys are nervous. Okay. Now, while we're waiting for those pictures to get up on the screen, I want to talk about something that I think is a phenomenon in our culture. That with the invention of the cell phone and the invention of having cameras with us everywhere, we have now invented a new way to take photos. It is a word that was not a part of our English language a handful of years ago, but now it's a word that we all know about, and that word is what? Selfie. The selfie is such a prominent part of our culture, we actually have our own equipment to make selfies better. Does anyone know what this is. That, you know more about the selfie than you do the Bible. Like, you guys are in unison. Like, the selfie. Right? So selfie stick. Okay. Now, what's phenomenal about the selfie stick is if you were born with, like, Tyrannosaurus Rex arms and you can't quite get the best angle for your selfie, then you have a stick that has a little remote and it works by Bluetooth, and you put your phone on there and you can hold it like way out. And I see people do this. Like, now it's not enough just to enjoy an event. You've got to take a selfie of the event. And when we take selfies, we're very strategic. It's like we've gone to school to learn how to take selfies. Like, people hold the camera higher because it makes you look thinner, right? You know this trick. And we use filters on our pictures to make us look better than we really are. And, like, we are selfie addicts. Now, if you are a person who does not take a lot of selfies, maybe you are not exactly, like, into the whole selfie thing. Maybe you've avoided social media. I would still say that you suffer from something that the characteristic of a selfie person, it just oozes from them. It is something that I call selfie-itis. It is a disease that we are born with. We didn't ask for it. It came with birth. Selfie-itis, you don't have to have a cell phone or you don't have to take a picture of yourself to be addicted to yourself. We are born wanting what we want, when we want it, and how we want it. We are born thinking that me or you are the, as you look it through your lens, you think that you are the most important person in the room, and I think about I am the most important person in the room. And when it comes to our photographs, when we take a picture, we're all guilty of this. And I want to show you. I want to just experiment with this. I think our pictures are coming. Hopefully. I've stalled long enough. I'll keep stalling for just a second. So, they didn't come through. Oh, interesting. Let's try this again. We'll stall longer. Just talk amongst yourselves. Bear with me. Let's see here. What? One, two. You think it's a selfie stick? Oh, it's a fancy selfie stick. Yeah. All right, it's probably because there's so many of us on Wi-Fi here. Let's see if this one goes through. Just bear with us. This is a really important social experiment that we're about to participate in. Okay, it says it's sending. Lord willing, it'll come. All right, they will mess with that, and we will get that up on the screen. Here's, though, what I want us to think about with pictures. When it comes to pictures, we are all guilty of this. If you are a part of a group shot of a photo, if someone takes a picture and you are a part of it, who is the first person you look at in the photo? Yourself, right? Like, very, very rarely will we look at everyone else, and then our eyes go to us. We want to see ourselves first. And when it comes to social media, there are some people who will see a group photo, and if they look good, it doesn't matter how everyone else looks. And they will post that photo on social media, and we call those people frenemies. There we go. There, we have. That's a little blurry. I'll blame the photographer on that one. All right, let's see if we got another one. Did any others come through, or just that one? Just that one. Let's try. I want to get the rest of these on the screen. It's still sending, two of two. So it's coming. They're just slow for some reason. Okay, you can take that down because I'm not liking looking at myself. Photographs, though, are incredibly important to us. In fact, my wife has often said that if our house was on fire and she could only go back and grab one thing, she would grab our photo albums. Because our photos, they matter to us. In fact, your photos matter to you. If you want to learn what someone fears losing, watch what they photograph. If you want to find out what is really important to someone else or what they fear losing, watch what they photograph, because we photograph what we value. And so for some of you, you photograph your car, or you might photograph your house, you might photograph your kids, maybe you photograph yourself because you're important to yourself, and we photograph what is incredibly important to us. And our culture then has come along and said, what's ultimately most important is yourself. So feed into yourself, give into yourself, make yourself look good. And if you don't have the discipline to make yourself look better, here are some Snapchat filters that are guaranteed to make you look prettier and skinnier and more muscular than you really are. And we have just fallen into this because it is just feeding into the culture of who we are. We are born with selfie-itis. I didn't have to teach my kids how to be selfish. They just were born that way. I didn't have to teach my kids how to say mine. That was never a lesson that we had. They just knew it. It was one of the first words that they learned. Mine. Give it to me. This is my stuff. And our culture is constantly feeding in by saying, hey, the answer to your problems is just more of you. You just need to become happier. You need to feed yourself more. You need to pamper yourself more. You need more of yourself. Spend more money. Have this. We are a consumeristic culture that says the answer to our problems is just to feed ourselves, to give ourselves, to do more for me. And Paul comes on the scene and he writes this letter and he says, listen, I know that we're selfish and I know that you think the answer is just to dig in more, but I want to offer you something that is counterculture. I want to offer you something that is going to help you find joy even in the midst of a difficult circumstance. And Paul shares with this church in Philippi, the way that they are able to be happy is not by being selfie addicts, it's by actually putting themselves to death and by being a part of something that is so much bigger than themselves. Paul is going to share some stuff for us, and I want to dive in to our text in Philippians 2, 1 through 2. This is the first part, and then we'll get to our theme verse that we shared. It says, therefore, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any common sharing in the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and one in mind. Paul does something amazing in this section. He has just talked about suffering and how you can have joy in the midst of suffering. If you suffer for a greater cause, if you suffer for Jesus, it actually does something for you. He just gets through this talk on suffering, and then he turns the page and he gets his preacher on. He starts talking directly to the Christians in Philippi. And he says, guys, I want you to make my joy complete. Now, this is fascinating because where is Paul at? Prison. So he's implying, I'm already full of joy, but there's a little joy missing. And the way that you can complete my joy is if you guys would be of like-minded. And he says, if you have just a little bit, if you have just a little bit of Jesus, if you have just a little bit in common, if you have just a little bit of love, make my joy complete by being like-minded. Now, I want to come out into the crowd again because I think you guys listen better when I'm out here. For some reason, everyone sits up and like pays attention and like, this is amazing. So Paul says that we are to be like-minded, and this is incredibly difficult because we are very different people, right? Like, we may have a few things in common, but everything is not in common. Like, for example, my favorite team, I like a basketball team in the NBA more than any other sport. When people ask me who my football team is, I don't give them a football team, I give them a basketball team, the Lakers. I'm a Lakers fan. When people ask me, did I watch the World Series? No, I'm waiting for the NBA season. Like, I don't watch a lot of other sports. I don't make time for it. I am passionate about the Lakers. Now, Paul is saying that we are to be like-minded. He is not saying that we need to all agree on everything, because if that was the case, then you would have to all become Lakers fans because I'm a Lakers fan. And you would have to give up your favorite teams, and you would have to stop watching football because I don't watch a lot of football until it comes to the Super Bowl, and you'd have to give up baseball, and you would all have to wear Lakers jerseys out in public, even though it embarrasses your wife. You would all have to do that because that's what I like, right? But Paul doesn't say, hey, listen, you guys, in order to be unselfish, you need to think just like each other, because that would be impossible. In fact, it's so impossible. This is why my wife and I, we took a vow. We said we will never tell anyone who we voted for in this last election, ever. Why? Because there are certain things, there are certain thought processes that are so different, it divides friends, right? You can have a friend or a family member that you say, we are so close, we share everything, until they tell you something that you disagree with. Then what happens? A wedge gets in the relationship, and you push them away, and you say, oh, I don't agree with you on that one. And what do we do when someone doesn't agree with us? We start to work really, really hard to convince them to see it our way. As if their way doesn't have any value, as if their way doesn't really matter. What really matters is the way that I view the world, and I want to convince you to think just like me. Paul is not telling selfish people to think alike. That is an impossible task. What Paul is saying is, listen, I want you guys to do something bigger. You have your own ways of viewing the world. You may vote for a certain person that's different than who I vote for. You may not like the Lakers. You may love the Lakers. You might be not walking with God and like the Celtics. I don't know what you're into. But Paul is not saying that we all have to have the same interests and we all have to like the same things. Paul is saying that we have to be a part of something that is bigger than ourselves. That to be like-minded is not saying that we have to be just alike. He's saying that we have to work together to serve one another. That in our differences, in the things that we have that are different, we've got to keep those at a minimum. That means that sometimes we don't talk about our differences because we know it's going to just wedge something in between us. What we need to do is focus on something that brings us together. And if you watch sports, you see this happen in our culture. The greatest sports teams are the ones where every single player submits to the other players. And what do we hate about sports? We hate it when someone in sports is incredibly what? Selfish. Doesn't it drive you crazy when you're like, no, like you're shooting the ball every time you touch it when there's other people that you would win if you would just not be so selfish? And Paul is echoing the same thought. Yeah, you have some gifts, and yes, you have talents, and you have some needs, and you have some opinions, and yeah, they're really important, but if you want to be a part of something bigger, you've got to say, I'm going to put other people first. I'm going to find a way to share and to put others first. To not highlight and just say it's my way or the highway, I'm going to try my best to live for something bigger. The first pill to killing selfie-itis is to put others first. Selfishness means we get what we want at the expense of others. Unselfishness, though, means we do what is best for the greater good. The problem, though, with selfishness is easy to see in other people, and it's almost impossible to see in ourselves. When we are being selfish, it doesn't like dawn on us and say, oh yeah, you know what? I'm being incredibly selfish. All we see is this is what I want. This is what I need. I need this in order to make it work, and I'm going to pitch a fit, and I'm going to do whatever I can. It doesn't matter how it affects the rest of the team. It is about me. Selfishness means we get what we want at the expense of others. Have you ever had a vacation ruined or a nice dinner ruined or a team meeting ruined because someone wasn't willing to play with everyone else? That someone was putting their needs ahead of everyone else's. And we see it and we say, that is so selfish. How could you be so selfish? But yet, every single one of us has an area where we're incredibly selfish. But Paul doesn't just come out right away and say, don't be selfish, because that wouldn't work. Like, have you ever met someone who was really selfish and just said, hey, you're being selfish? How did they respond to that? Like, they don't say, well, thank you for pointing out how selfish I am. I'm now going to change my ways, right? We don't respond with just being told that we're selfish. So Paul doesn't just say, hey, you guys are selfish. Paul says, hey, you need to consider other people better than yourselves. You need to be thinking about other people. You need to be putting other people's needs ahead of your own. And then he goes on to say in Philippians 2, 3 through 4, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves. Not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Well, does that mean that our preferences don't matter? No. Your preferences matter. Like, your opinions matter. You as a human being, matter. But you don't matter more than the greater of the team. And whenever there is dysfunction in a relationship, it is because one or both people are being selfish and putting their needs ahead of the rest of the team. And maybe it's in marriage, or maybe it's with your kids, or maybe it's at work, but dysfunction happens and disorder happens when selfishness is present. When we say to ourselves, my needs are more important than your needs, you need to meet my needs, I'm not willing to come and meet yours. When we argue about something and we say, I'm unwilling to relent on this one thing, this idea, this thought is more important than our relationship. I would rather end our relationship than submit and humble myself for the good of our relationship. Paul says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, rather in humility. Humility. I love what C.S. Lewis says about humility. He defines humility, he says that humility is not thinking less about yourself, it's thinking about yourself less. I love that definition. The humility is not saying, woe is me, I don't matter, I'm not important. Yes, you're important, I'm important, we matter. Jesus died for us, and if you were the only human being on this earth, Jesus would have died for you, but you are not more important than everyone else. And together, we are to submit to one another. We are to, in humility, value others above ourselves. Paul says, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. Oftentimes, people talk about the difficulties of relationships and just how hard they are. Relationships are hard. Whether it's marriage or friendship or with your parents or family, like coworkers, relationships are really, really hard. But if you're here today and you're a person who says, I wish I had more friends. I wish I had some deeper connections. Like, I like my family, I like some things, but I just wish that I was deeper in friendships. I wish that I knew people better. I wish that I just had someone that I could bare my soul to. If you've ever had that thought and you just want a little bit more out of relationships, you need to tattoo this verse on your body. Paul says that the key is to not look at your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. You want to know who the most interesting man in the world is? He's not on beer commercials. He's the person who pays attention to you. The people that we love the most are the ones that are interested in us, right? The relationships that we connect with are the ones that find joy in the things that we find joy in. The best relationships are the ones where we know they're excited about something simply because I'm excited about it. And selfish relationships say, you know what? There's some things you like, and I'm just not going to have anything to do with it. I can't do that. I won't go there. I won't be a part of it. This past week, a phenomenon happened. If you're on social media, you probably saw this. It's a phenomenon that unites a certain people group. It's a people group that falls in the window of about 25 years old to about 45 years old, and they happen to be female, and most of them are white. And if you fall in that phenomenon, there's a great chance that this past week you spent time watching Gilmore Girls on Netflix. I heard that watching Gilmore Girls is the pumpkin spice latte of TV. It is a fascinating thing to watch that so many people in the same age bracket, of the same gender, of the same race, like fall in love. They all have the exact same interests. And so I am married to a woman who falls in that age bracket, and she is white, and she happens to love Gilmore Girls. And so when Gilmore Girls came on Netflix, my temptation was to say, I don't want anything to do with Gilmore Girls because I don't give a rip about Rory Gilmore and whoever else. I don't even know the... Lorelai, thank you. Thank you, single white women everywhere. Maybe not single. Maybe you're married. Just white women. Lorelai. So isn't it, though, the temptation in a relationship when someone brings one of their interests to the table, isn't the temptation to push them away and say, we don't have a common interest in this, and so I don't want anything to do with it? And because my wife loves me, she didn't make me watch Gilmore Girls. But because I love my wife, I showed a lot of interest in Gilmore Girls. And so you show interest by just saying, hey, what's going on in the show? I know this is important to you. I see you texting your friends and you guys are really excited. I want to be a part of this. So tell me what's going on and what part of the season are you on? And why does this matter too much to you? And asking questions and showing interest, what you find is that when you show interest in other people, it draws them in into your life. And the most popular people in the world are not the people with the best gifts or the most talents or the most money. The most popular people in the world are the people that find a way to be interested in the most people. And you may not have an interest with everything, with everyone, but you can find a common interest. You can find one thing that you can connect with, and you pour into that. And how different would our relationships be instead of just sitting there and talking about what we care about and what is important to us if we found out what mattered to the people that were in our lives? Your kids are interested in some things that you may not care about, but the key to their heart is to be interested in what they are interested in. And your spouse may love some things that you don't love, and it doesn't mean that you have to go hunting with them when it's hunting season. It doesn't mean that you have to go shopping with them every Friday. It doesn't mean that you have to do everything with them, but if you want a bond with another human being, you must show interest in what they are interested in. And Paul says, listen, if you're a part of the local church, then you have to put each other's interests. Find out what each other is interested in. Be a part of each other. Ask questions. Dig in. Don't just be about yourself. Because selfishness doesn't work outside of the church. We think it does. We are consumeristic. So we think that the answer is to pour into ourselves and spend more money on ourselves and eat more and shop more and spend more. We think that's the answer, but it's not the answer. And yet, we often bring a selfish mindset in with us to the local church. And what do we say when we come into the church? We say certain things like, I don't like that type of music. I prefer this type of music. And I don't like when the pastor's out of town. And I don't like this. And I wish they would do this. And like, have you ever noticed that there's a million churches in our area and people just keep hopping from church to church trying to find a church that will meet all of their needs? And that's a problem. There are no perfect churches. There's no churches that are going to meet all of your needs. And the answer is not just to say, okay, well, I'm just going to go to some church that I hate. The answer is to find a church that you love and start serving and giving and being about others. Find interest in others. And watch what happens. When you pour into and you show interest in others, you actually give people an invitation to come to get to know you. It's phenomenal how this works. You ask someone, if you sit down and you show interest and talk to them and say, hey, what do you do for a job? They will talk about themselves for a while. But eventually, human beings will turn it back around and say, you've shown interest in me. Now I want to know about you. What do you do for a job? And the way that we connect with each other is not by just preaching about ourselves more or pushing our needs or our opinions on other people. The way that we build friendships is by saying, hey, tell me your story. What do you care about? When someone says to you, I just don't like church, it's full of hypocrites, instead of going on the defensive and saying, well, let me tell you why it's not, what about if you showed interest in them and in their story and said, hey, I'm sorry that you've been hurt. Can you share with me your experience? And what if you showed interest in their hurt and you actually cared about them instead of just trying to convince them that your way of seeing the world was right? What would happen? They might would come in instead of be pushed away. And Paul says that, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves. Not looking to your own interests, but each of you the interests of others. I'm convinced that it is impossible to constantly think about yourself and to be truly happy. And for so many of us, we're looking for the secret to happiness, and we think it's in buying stuff or in a nicer house or buying a boat or in a better body or in more friends. And we think that the happiness is found in this stuff. But the problem is that we can get everything that we desire and still be miserable human beings. Because selfishness is never satisfied. And if you're not happy with the amount of money you make right now, you won't be happy if you get a raise and make $50,000 more. You'll find a way to be unhappy. If you don't like the friends that you have right now, if you wish you had different friends, the answer is not just different friends, because you'll find a new group of friends and you'll find there's still problems there. And so often, our selfishness, it leads us to destruction. It is impossible to constantly think about yourself and truly be happy. And the way that Paul is able to be happy and have some joy in the midst of prison is because he's thinking about some other people. And he's saying, guys, while I'm in prison, I'm thinking about you. You make my joy complete. And if you could be like-minded, if you could be on the same page, if you could do this thing together, it would be of something that was so much greater than any of us could ever do on our own. I love the quote by Daniel Goleman from Social Intelligence, The New Science of Human Relationships. He says, self-absorption in all its form kills empathy, let alone compassion. When we focus on ourselves, our world contracts as our problems and preoccupations loom large. But when we focus on others, our world expands. Our own problems drift to the periphery of the mind and so seem smaller. And we increase our capacity for connection or compassionate action. Well, what's he saying here? Well, he's saying that when we are just looking for our own self-interest, what it does is it magnifies our problems. And when you focus on yourself, your problems seem really big, and you start to say, well, I don't have everything that I want. and I don't have a big enough house, and I don't have the family that I want, and I'm not as thin as I want to be, and I don't have the hair that I wish I had, and I don't have this, and I don't, and you start looking inward, and as you are selfish, you just see, man, I got a lot of junk, I got a lot of problems. Your problems are minimized, not when you focus more on your problems, but when you look out and you say, hey, how can I serve others? Because when you serve other people, you find out often that people have more and bigger problems than you. And the biggest way to find some contentment in your marriage is go help serve someone who has a really broken, dysfunctional marriage. Some of the best days of my life are after I counsel couples. Because I go home and I just hug my wife. And it's like, Monica, I'm so thankful that you put up with me and that I'm so thankful that you love me. Why? Because when you help others, it makes you see, you know what, yeah, I don't have a perfect relationship, but it puts things in perspective. And Paul says that, listen, if you are going to survive as a church, if you're going to survive through the hiccups and the heartaches of this world, you got to stop thinking about my needs and what meets my needs and what's going to help me the most, and you've got to start thinking about other people. I love the quote by Pastor Craig Rochelle. He says, when talking about the local church, we are not spiritual consumers, we are spiritual contributors. The church does not exist for us. We are the church and we exist for the world. The response so often on social media from the church is that when someone disagrees with us, we want to be selfish and convince them to agree with us. Instead of digging in and finding out why they are the way that they are, we simply just want to preach and throw out a Bible verse to them to convince them that the way that they view the world is completely wrong. But the way that we engage the world is not by telling them how wrong they are. The way that we engage the world is by digging in a little bit and saying, hey, tell me your story. So you don't believe in the Bible like I do. Well, why? Where? How did you come to that conclusion? You dig in and watch as they come closer to you. And so often the problem with the local church is that we bring the selfish mindset, the consumeristic mindset from out there, and we bring it in here and we just say, feed me, meet my needs, help me, and we forget that we are supposed to be the light of the world. What we do here really matters. And you get to be a part of that. A couple weeks ago, someone from our church on social media is going through chemotherapy, and she's had an amazing attitude going through this. It's been encouraging to watch, and I'm sure it's been hard for her, but the parts that she shared have really been encouraging to see from an outsider watching her posts and just how it's brought her family together and how she's just stayed positive in the midst of all this. And a few months before she got cancer, she shared with me that one of her prayers is that her son would one day come to church with her, that he's gone kind of the prodigal way and gone away from God and doesn't want to have a lot to do with the local church. And so it's been her prayer. And so she never asked to have cancer. She never asked to be a part of this. And I don't think God gave her cancer. I think it's just a part of being in a fallen, broken world. But a result of her cancer is that she's been spending a lot of time in chemotherapy. And last week, while she was in chemotherapy, it was her second to last session. Her son, that she has viewed as a prodigal son, came and spent the day with her. And they were able to talk about what is important to them and talk about life. And she shared that she really would love to share something that she's found. She'd love to share her experience with God. She would love it if he would come to church. Now, I don't know if you were here last Sunday or not, and I don't know what your view is of the local church, but there's a great chance if you're a part of the church, last Sunday you just thought, well, I just got to get to church. I need my needs met. I need to be fed. Maybe I'll volunteer a little bit. Maybe I'll give a little bit. I'll just kind of do my thing, but I really need something out of this. But the power of the local church is not just having our needs met. The power of the local church is when we come together and say, we exist to be the salt and light of the world, and we exist to make a difference. And when we come together and do that, powerful things happen. And last week, I don't know what you were thinking. If you volunteer at the doors, I don't know what you were thinking as you were parking cars. I don't know what you were thinking as you were passing out the amazing cinnamon rolls and our great coffee out there. I don't know what you were thinking as you were holding babies. I don't know what you were thinking as you were helping people find seats in here. I don't know if you don't volunteer. I don't know what you were thinking when you came in and you sat in these seats. But I'll tell you what I was thinking. I was thinking that every single Sunday is the Super Bowl, and every single Sunday is someone's first chance and maybe only chance to come and experience God. And when I got up to preach, what I saw is this woman who's going through chemotherapy is sitting in our service with her son. I don't know why some of you didn't clap on that. That's a very appropriate thing to clap for. Some of you have a heart that is just two sizes too small. I want to pray for your heart. Why is that something that's exciting? I'll tell you why. Because when we think that the local church is just about meeting our needs, we eventually consume it and it becomes a problem in our life. And we start saying, well, the preacher didn't meet my needs and he didn't go deep enough. And that service, I didn't like that song. And man, I didn't get a whole lot out of the talk. Did you get a lot out of the talk? And I don't really like my small group. And I don't really like this. And we start to consume and find problems with it. But when we have our mindset on, the idea is to come together to be salt and light in the world. What we see is that God uses us and our imperfections to change people's lives. But we've got to fight and resist the selfie mindset. We've got to keep that selfishness outside. There is no room for it in the local church. And so Paul then goes on to say, and we'll conclude with this, Philippians 2:5. He says, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus. So in your relationships with one another, the first pill to killing selfishness, to kill selfie-itis, is to consider other people, to think about other people. But the final pill, the way that really just puts a death nail in your selfishness, is to consider and have the same mindset as Jesus. Now, why is this so important? Well, because Jesus is a God who demands our full attention and demands that we give everything to him and demands that he is the center of the universe. And yet, he humbled himself and came to a dirty earth and died on a cross for us. You talk about unselfish, that's the God that we serve. And we are never more like Jesus than when we serve other people. If you want to be like God, if you want to just feel like him and experience what he experiences, serve other people. Because that's what Jesus did. And in your mind, when you're tempted to be selfish, you got to consider Jesus and think, man, I want to put my needs in. I want to be about me. But what did Jesus do? I don't know how you feel about the English language, but I hate the English language. It is so confusing. And it's so often when it comes to spelling, it just doesn't make sense to me. And I struggled with spelling all as a kid. And my dad was a former teacher at one point. And so he would give me these little like tools to help me become a better speller because it wasn't natural for me. And when it came to some of our spelling words, my dad would always say this little phrase. Maybe you've heard it. I before E except what? After C. I before E except after C. And this is the way that our culture works. It's the exact same as that frame. Our culture works I before E. I, me, before everyone else. My needs matter before everyone else. Make sure I'm taken care of. Make sure I have my preferences. Make sure I'm okay first before everyone else. But then Jesus comes in and he says, I before E except after C. When Jesus enters the equation, it is E before I. In Christianity, it flips the script. And let me just tell you, if you're miserable in your relationships, look inward. How selfish are you being? If you want to find happiness in the midst of difficult circumstances, find a way to serve other people. And when you have no way of doing that in your own, consider Jesus. Why? Because I before E, except after C. So here's the application. Battle selfishness by putting someone first and inviting them to join you for a service at Next Level. I shared this a few weeks ago, but it is said that 82% of people would come to church if someone simply invited them. But in the past year, only 2% of Christians actually invited someone to come to church. If you want to battle this selfish mindset, what if it started with simply being the salt and light of the world and saying to someone who doesn't have a relationship with God, hey, would you want to come check out church with me? And if they say no, you don't push back, you don't fight them, you don't convince them, you figure out their story and you say, hey, let me push in and figure out what you are interested in, why you do feel this way. Let me show some interest in you and maybe it'll change your story. I before E, except after C. Will you guys pray with me? God, thank you for this day. Thank you for the way that you challenge us and the way that you speak against our culture. And God, selfishness is the hardest thing to destroy. It is the thing that causes so much havoc in our relationships. And I just ask, God, in Jesus' name, that you would just help us, God, especially those of us that are hurting right now. It is so easy to point out other people's faults and other people's failures and what they're doing wrong. But would you help us, God, just for a second to focus on you and to focus on what you're doing right. And God, I just ask that you would just dig into our hearts, that you would expose the areas where we're selfish. I ask, God, that you would just dig into our minds and that you would just convict us of the areas where we've put our needs ahead of others. And God, would you just do something that would just be crazy? Would you help us to be a church that is attractive to people because of our love for one another? Would you help us to be a church that dies to self? Would you help us to be a church that works hard to put each other's needs ahead of our own? God, would you help us to be a church that finds interest in people that are so different from us? And we just thank you for what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net or find us on Facebook or Twitter.